bangthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, September 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we're pushing through the middle of the week here, getting a little bit closer to football. Two guests joined me on the program today. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Three college football games to discuss with him, all of them by listener request. Couple of NFL games to tackle as well. Second half of today's show, we'll talk with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, also host on VSiN. We'll check in with him about some of the games that are on his radar for this week and also a couple of golf tournaments here with the BMW PGA Championship and the European Tour and the Sanderson Farms Championship on the PGA Tour. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff. Very good group of writers over there putting out some high-quality material for you. My College Football Power Ratings went up on Monday. Opening line reports as well. Some situational betting tips for this week in college. Doing NASCAR and UFC for you this week also. Then we'll have Danny Vorgs' updated NFL Power Ratings. Those are always fantastic. A very good read with those. Getting closer to the NHL season. Parker Michaels will be making his return to bangthebook.com very shortly with a look at some stuff out there in the futures market. We got WNBA playoff coverage, continued Major League Baseball coverage, a lot of stuff going on over at the website. Make sure that you check it out. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Before I bring on my first guest, Brian Leonard, I do want to let you know that we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Got a prior commitment on Wednesday morning. Can't do the show live. So obviously some of these lines may have moved around a little bit in terms of being about, 21 hours or so away from when we usually do the show. I will post it earlier in the morning on Wednesday, hoping that we get out in front of some of those line moves and stuff like that. But I just want to let you know that some of these lines, some of these prices may have definitely moved around in the time between recording and actually posting the show. I apologize for that, but I wanted to make sure that I got the Wednesday show out for you. So we'll do the best we can here with this show. We'll be back to normal with the regular recording time on Thursday. Got two guests here on today's show. We'll start things off with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Just put up a big 5% play on the Friday college football card. 27-9 in the last year on our 5% plays. Love this play on Friday. And you picked that up with a guarantee of 150% of your purchase price coming back to you if we fail to cover this game. But I don't think we have to worry about that one. Love this game for Friday. I don't do a lot of promotion on your show, Adam, and I appreciate you giving me the chance to talk a little bit about what I do, but I wanted to get that out there for Friday. Loving this play, but we're going to be talking about some Saturday college football action.
We are, but I'm going to hold off on that for a minute because you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here, and one of the luxuries of pre-recording is I do get to shoot the shit with my guests a little bit. You and I were talking about Major League Baseball and how it's become such an afterthought for a lot of people. I did mention baseball on Monday's show, sort of saying that if you've got some of these really big underdogs that are still trying hard, they may be good bets at this point in time against teams that have either been furiously trying to get back into the playoff picture or teams that have just been playing at a very, very high level for a long period of time. Do you get that same feeling as well, or do you feel like it's going to be really chalky these last, week and a half, 2 weeks of the season?
It's normally really chalky, and it's the right way to go about it when you're looking at baseball anymore. You have the haves and the have-nots, but I didn't understand a line move yesterday. Washington was at St. Louis. Both teams were obviously a lot to play for. Both teams were red-hot pitchers on the mound. Washington opened, I believe, a 110 favorite, went all the way up to like 145, and that was, and I'm a big believer in following the markets, but that was just so out of range, and I came in with St. Louis as my play last night, a nice 4-2 winner. Sometimes the line moves, people look at that and they think it's going to continue to move and that's the right side. people got to remember, you know, we talk about this all the time. You're betting numbers. You're not betting teams. And once it went from 110, sure, I could see Washington at 110. They've got an ace on the mound, a team that needs to win. But it gets up to 140, and then you got St. Louis going with a pitcher who was even more red hot his last seven starts. And St. Louis has been playing a little bit better, and you're catching them at plus, you know, 130 or whatever in a game that should be more in the pick'em range. And I even said that in the write-up. And, you know, it's just one game, anything can happen. But St. Louis wins that game, and rarely do you see a team fighting in the playoffs, fighting for the playoffs, as a home underdog catching that kind of number. And we got it yesterday. And I actually have a baseball play up today that I thought was very similar. The line is moving a little bit. I released it as early as I can so we could take advantage of that. But there's so many people right now just have either had a bad baseball season or they've given up on baseball to work on football. There's still plenty of money out there in baseball to make. And, you know, we made 181% profit the last 2 years. I'm getting ready to triple our clients' baseball product in 2 years, profits in 2 years. It's just been tremendous, but yet people would rather bet on the nationally televised game that really doesn't have much of an edge as opposed to betting something else that is definitely has an edge, and we've proven it the last 2 years.
Well, admittedly, it wasn't my proudest moment to give up on the baseball season here this year, but I agree with you. There's still equity to be had out there, especially for those that are still, you know, dipping into that market. And also, too, I mean, you've got so many call-ups. You've got a lot of different-looking lineups, stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of times the modeling crowd going to spit out X based on, you know, who's pitching, who's playing, and all that. Maybe sometimes there are some values in going the other way with some of those line moves. So, you know, definitely an interesting thing to keep an eye on. And make sure you check out Brian's baseball work over there at wagertalk.com the rest of the way. And look, I mean, I get it. I'm sure you could talk baseball all day, every day. There was a time where I could do that. It was like 3 months ago. But at this point in time here, it's all football for everybody. So that's what we're going to cover here on the show. And Brian, I guess I'll ask you this to start things off. It's already week four of the college football season. It feels like it just started. Is this about the time where you start, you know, making some concrete determinations about teams?
Well, you should be able to by now. You start to realize that certain teams aren't nearly as good as what you thought they were going to be. Other teams, and we've talked about this in the past couple of weeks with it on here, it has been somewhat a surprise. We looked at Maryland, and we both talked about Maryland being probably our biggest gainer that we've used, and then all of a sudden Maryland plays an actual team with a defense. And it came back, and, you know, they lose that game to Temple. So the more pieces of data you get, it's better for us, but it's also better for the lines maker. So he's looking at the same information as we're looking at. And unfortunately, by the time we get a good feel on somebody, the lines maker, chances are, has the same one. So I tend to, it's nice to be, and I talk about this in baseball when you're looking at pitchers, it's nice to be able to have a pitcher who is very consistent each and every time out, and you know what you're going to get. But from a betting perspective, there's not any value there because they know the same thing as you do. If you can find something, whereas if, you know, in certain teams, or like say, take a look at another way, look at a football season, you've got certain quarterbacks that put up certain numbers at home, put up different, totally different numbers on the road. That's one more step than what you would look at in a normal quarterback rating. You look at, you know, golf. The Rams are going to play Cleveland this weekend. And golf is much better when he plays at home, and he's much better when he doesn't have any pressure on him. Well, he's got to go on the road, and he goes up against that Cleveland defense that puts a lot of pressure on you when they're not jumping offside or roughing the quarterback. But that's something that you have to look at when you're betting that game. It's, you're not getting home game golf, you get road game golf, and that's a different situation. Not saying I'll be on Cleveland, because the Browns, for the most part, to me, looked horrendous yesterday, and I don't know if they'll catch my money for a while yet, but they were able to get that win. But teams have played better, and certain quarterbacks play better against weak opposition as opposed to playing against a good opposition. It's just different ways to break it down, and that's what you have to do when the lines are as good as what you think they are. You've got to take it another step or two and try to find some value. And one of the things I do is game grades. I use that for baseball. I use it for football. And one of the games we're going to talk about, the Michigan State game last week, the game grade tells me that Michigan State was the better team on the field, although they didn't get that victory over Arizona State. And that's something that I think we can use to our advantage. But when you take a look at that line, it opened 6.5, it's now up to 9.5, approaching 10. A lot of people are looking at the same thing.
At risk of not getting to everything that I listed on the script, I do want to touch on a couple of things here, and maybe this is a good time to do it since we are recording, you know, a day early and that maybe some of these lines will move. But I wanted to get your take on Circa opening up the college football market with both sides and totals. Because as somebody, you know, in the state of Ohio like I am, I don't have access to anything that's out there in Nevada, anything that's out there at, you know, in New Jersey, anything of that sort. So in terms of watching the market, you know, BetOnline pops the openers on Sundays for college football with very low limits, mind you. But what they're basically doing at this point in time, they open between where Circa opened and where the lines have moved at Circa based on the open. So there's really not a whole lot of equity. It's not a mature market per se, but it's a market where they already have an idea. They already have a sense of direction. And I know these lines are still moving over the course of the week, but man, Circa, I don't blame them for this. I give them a lot of credit for willing to take on the risk, but they've made the college football market harder than I think I can ever remember it being.
I understand that. And I have a Circa app. I don't have my Circa app loaded, and people question that. They say, well, I thought you used to bet openers. Well, I would bet openers that were bad openers. The people over at Circa do an excellent job, and they're doing what we all want. They take bets. They put out lines early. Yeah, they do everything. You know, you're friends with Matt. Matt has just done a tremendous job, and Matt Lindemann over there. And even when he was at Caesars, Caesars kept a lot of things that he did, and I like the things that Caesars has done much better than the way it used to be, where you didn't know from, you know, just a few years ago that 1 week Wynn would put out opening numbers, another week Cantor would put out opening numbers, and a couple weeks actually Treasure Island would put out a couple numbers, and it only take you $500, but you get there ready to bet, and then they go, oh, we're not ready, we're going to put them out later. Well, how do you run a business when you don't, when you're going to be putting them out at different times of the day? Circa has changed all of that. Circa puts them out the same time every week. I love it, but I respect their numbers so well, I don't need to have money into their account because every other place is opening the same numbers later on that day or the next morning. So you could still get your opening bets in a Circa, but you're getting them in against what I consider a very good line. A lot of the bettors will wait until Monday morning when everybody copies Circa and puts them out. And as the week goes on, it used to be you would have to have all your work done to bet into the opening numbers. I myself have my work done, but I don't nearly need to have it done as fast as I had in the past because you've got more time to work on it because I know the lines are going to be there. These Circa lines have been good. They don't move a whole lot, which tells me that they're pretty accurate. But we've seen more lines move. Like this morning, I pay for a bunch of other services because basically my income is betting on games. One guy put out his 5 or 6 plays. As soon as he put them out, lines moved like crazy. I was only able to get his line on 2 of those games. He had 5 plays. But it gives me an idea of a guy that I highly respect which side he's on. And that way later on in the week, if the numbers haven't moved too much, maybe I could bet a slightly worse number. But it's just something that you could take care of as the week goes on. I get more and more information, and then I can bet them at those lines. And it's totally different than the way it was earlier. But to me, I like it a little bit better. I'm not getting down on nearly as much Sunday night, but I'm more confident in where I believe the line is going to move as opposed to in the past because I think there was a lot of head fakes going on when people are only taking $500 a bet and all of a sudden you take a couple 500s and the line moves a little bit. Nobody buys back then. I go, well, shit, let me put another couple 500s in here. Line moves again. Nobody buys back. And then they come around and they say, well, all right. Well, then when it gets down to game day, they can get the numbers that they can pick off a little bit better. But it's a different game. Everybody's in this to do something different. I'm going to pick winners. I'm not a guy who plays a lot of middles. So it's a little bit different game for me.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up. And you know, this is something that I've seen a lot in the market. I saw it a lot during baseball season in particular, where a lot of times the opening move in baseball was pretty true. The line might come back a little bit, but by and large, we'd see 20, 25, 30-cent line moves. A lot of times this year in baseball, and maybe it's been different here in September just because, you know, of the bigger favorites and whatnot, but it felt like a lot of times early in the year, you'd get that initial move on a side that I agreed with, and you'd get the buyback. You'd get the scalp. You'd get the middle. You'd get the person that, you know, wanted to either partial hedge or just arbitrage that type of game, somebody with significant money to move around. And I feel like there have been a lot of college football moves this year like that as well, where you get that initial move, and then all of a sudden later on in the week, it starts coming back again. And that's not just competing groups of sharps or anything like that. There's a lot of market massaging going on, a lot of head faking going on. And maybe that just speaks to the inherent efficiency of the market, where that's the way to beat it now, is to kind of play both sides, try to get middles, free roll wherever you can. It just seems like that's kind of the operating procedure for a lot of groups out there.
Well, going back to baseball, there was a lot of model makers who would hit the overnights in baseball. And you would have everybody's looking at the same numbers. So all of your model guys are all spitting out the same thing. So they would say Team A should be a 170 favorite. It opens up 130, so they bet it up. And then followers would continue to bet it up. And then when the day comes, is the day of the game, you've got your handicappers coming in that are actually handicapping the games. Because from my perspective, I can't give out an overnight line on a game. In fact, I had two plays I released today. They both moved at least 15 cents from the time I released it. And just imagine if I was to release something on an immature market of the overnights, and I'd say we'll play Team A at minus 130. Well, by the time somebody gets around to the local bookie in the morning, the line's at 170, they can't bet it. So it leaves me out of that area, being a guy who bets and also sells plays. From a betting standpoint, great. But from a selling pick standpoint, I can't do that. I have to know what your customers are. And customers, you know, a lot of them can't bet offshore. And if they can bet offshore, they don't have the same account, which is always a concern. So in football, it's similar. The guys that are hitting those opening numbers are all doing it from a model perspective. Their model points says the line should be 9. The line comes out 4. They bet the minus 4. But when the games start, you know, on Monday when everybody copies that, then you got the guys who are doing the handicapping. And certain games where I love a certain game, but I don't get the number I want. Now, later on in the week, I may end up playing the opposite of the team that I love because the number has gone so far to that side, or I make my own numbers. And so I'll say, well, I love this game if I could lay the 7, but now I'm getting 10. So, you know, my number is 5. I could have played it at 6. I could have played it at 7. But now it's a 10. I've got to start looking at the other direction.
Well, and what kind of made me think of this is Right Angle Sports actually tweeted this about a half hour or so before you and I started recording and started just shooting the shit before the show. Right Angle, who, by the way, is in the lead in the Super Contest Gold right now after 2 weeks, said, have we reached a point where more big line moves, especially early in the week, are caused by service releases than pros or groups actually betting? And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, you've got different contexts of line moves out there in the marketplace. You've got some that are very respected groups. You've got some that are, you know, service releases that just have people that, you know, they send their plays out to subscribers and they cause a ripple effect in the market because it's, you know, almost a line movement by volume. Then you've also got the professionals who, some of them may be modelers, some of them may be people like you. There are a lot of different kinds of professional bettors out there. It's interesting to see the way that this market has kind of moved forward and progressed over the last few years. And also, you know, some of that modeling crowd comes from a DFS background where, you know, they kind of realized, hey, you know, DFS is kind of getting to a certain point. Let's go and bet with the model infrastructure that we already have. It's a fascinating market, and I think it's really hard to ascertain early in the week who is making that move and whether or not that move will stick.
It's interesting you talk about Edward Gold. I've been doing this forever. I started with Edward probably, it's got to be at least 10 years ago, and I bought his service, and for a while I could get the bets in that he had. And it's got to the point where it doesn't make any sense for me to buy it because I can't get the numbers. I told you about another service I used today, and I only got two of the five or six games that he released. I get Warren Sharp every year. Warren, to me, is the best NFL information guy out there. And he sends them out, and you hope to get the numbers. And that's in the NFL where everybody takes big limits in the NFL, and even it's hard a lot of times to get the numbers that he sends out. So you want the information, and you may not get the actual number he's releasing, which, you know, it sucks that you can't get the number, but you get the information, and he's so good that it moves the number. And to be honest with you, all these sports books buy all the good services out there. Somebody complained about my putting in a baseball lot today and the line's moving 10, 15 cents. Well, don't you think if the sports books know who's winning in baseball, they're going to have the same information? It doesn't cost a lot of money to buy my season service in baseball. You could have probably gotten it for $500 or something if it discounted the rate over at Wager Talk. And, you know, that's nothing. That's less than a bet for most people. So they have the same information. When I'm sending out the information, they're getting the same information too. And I'm trying to get these bets in, knowing I'm not only competing with the other people who bought the service, but I'm also competing with the sports book who has that play, and he knows where the money's coming in. So as soon as he gets that play, he's going to start moving it regardless. Moving on air. That's something that it's different now than it was in the past. Is everybody at this point knows who's good and they want to be part of that. And I know guys that don't do any handicapping at all. They just buy, this guy's the best baseball capper, I'm buying him. This guy's the best tennis capper, I'm buying him. And that's what they do. And it costs them a lot of money to bet it to buy all these services. But they were able to take advantage of slow-moving books. And, you know, unfortunately, that's one of the ways that you get kicked out. But, you know, here in Vegas, they're not allowed to kick you out unless you're William Hill or Stasis or whatever. You go to South Point, you go to the Westgate, you go to Circa, they're not going to kick you out. They want that information. So those are the places that you're basically limited to play at.
It's so interesting. And again, I mean, there are so many more layers to this market, I think, than people realize. And especially when you consider, you know, the different market forces that are in play and, you know, who gets the respect, who doesn't, you know, do those line moves hold, you know, how much influence does the public have, especially in a market like the NFL, you know, a lot of really interesting things that, you know, it would take us doing multiple shows on just that to try and come up with some answers and some things for you. But, you know, in any event, there's only so many hours in the day, but these are definitely discussions that you can have if you really wanted to. But, Brian, as far as looking at some of these games here, you mentioned this game already, game 333-334. You've got Michigan State and Northwestern, this one by listener request here. Where Michigan State, you could have actually had them -6.5 early in the week. They're up to 9.5 now, and this was a line that even touched 10 at some places before coming back down.
I really wanted to play Michigan State. I think this is just a great spot for them. I talked about the game grade. They actually outplayed Arizona State. Michigan State's a team that doesn't give up running yards. They've only allowed 0.90 yards on the ground playing against Tulsa, Western Michigan, and Arizona State. Three decent teams. I mean, none of them are bad teams. There's parts of each of these teams that I like. You take a look at Northwestern. They played Stanford and UNLV, two teams I'm looking to fade, actually. And, you know, Stanford's, they run for 4.45 yards against those teams, but now they're going up against a team that can't run on. So you have to look at Northwestern from a passing standpoint. Passing grade so far, playing two teams that, once again, I'm looking to fade, their passing rating is only 86.51. So they're going to have to pass against this Michigan State defense. And if they're a one-dimensional team, I don't care if you're playing at home or not, And as bad as this Michigan State offense has been, I can't see Northwestern putting many points on this board. But once again, this is the game I was looking to bet at 7 or less. Now it's at 9.5. I won't get on it at 10, but it will keep me off of Michigan State. Right now they've priced me out of it. I'll see what's happened. Maybe I can find another way, maybe play them in the first half or something, go that way as the game approaches. But this is going to be very tough for Northwestern to score on this offense. You know, keep in mind, they only put up 30 points against UNLV, who's not very good offensively at all. And, you know, Stanford is really down. They've really showed it the last few weeks. They only score 7 against Stanford. So not looking for Northwestern to put up many points. Maybe we could play Northwestern points, team total under, something of that nature in this game. But the price now going up to 9.5 has priced me out. So we just got to find different ways to play this game.
Northwestern 110th in the country in yards per play. So it gives you an idea of how much they have struggled to move the ball. And, you know, Brian, something else that we have talked about here before in the past, and something we can mention very quickly here. Again, you look for context clues in the line to kind of give you an idea of how this game may play out. And you rarely see a team approaching double digits with a total of 40. And in fact, this one opened offshore 38.5. So gives you an idea there of what you're looking at from this Northwestern offense and just how inept they could possibly be here in this game. We'll move on to game 355-356 in the SEC East, Tennessee and Florida. Florida, a 14-point favorite. Doesn't seem like anyone's worried about the loss of Felipe Franks when it comes to Florida's power rating and how they have them priced for this game. Had a listener request for this one, though, so what are your thoughts on this game?
My lines go anywhere from 13.5 to 19.5 in this game. It's basically where I think it should be. I look at this game and, you know, the lines was right now 14. Looks like it's heading up to 14.5. Have not been overly impressed with Florida. Felipe Franks has not performed well. Now we don't have to worry about it. But keep in mind, there was a reason why he was the starting quarterback there. He's no longer there. I think people will get their hopes up a little bit, thinking that maybe he's not there and they'll be better. The coaching staff knows who the best quarterbacks are. They know who's – he wouldn't have been starting if they had somebody better to replace him. Tennessee is a team that right now that – I don't know what the hell to get out of Tennessee. I bet on Tennessee against BYU in that game, and I thought I was in pretty good shape, and they ended up losing that game 29-26 to come back beat Chattanooga last week 45-0. But when you look at the game score there, they weren't overly impressive. Chattanooga's just not a very good team. On the season, we take a look at Tennessee. Opponents only 3.71 yards a carry, which isn't bad, but you know, this team from a passing standpoint, they're very good against the pass. 98.07 passer rating they've given up, and you've got, as we mentioned, this Florida passing game 166.18 with Franks, but yet he wasn't very impressive. So losing him, that could be a concern. I think the line is where it should be here. I want no part of Tennessee, but I think Florida is a little bit overrated. My lines are saying basically it should be in the 14-15 range overall. That's what we're getting here. So I'll likely pass on this one.
Yeah, I got this one in the 15.5 range. So I agree. I'm kind of in the same spot as you are. But, yeah, I mean, look, Florida's not a team I want to lay big numbers with. And, you know, even Tennessee, I mean, it looks like a big number for Tennessee, but, you know, we all know how they look to start this season. We all know how they're kind of in a state of flux, I guess I would say, to put it kind of nicely. So I think it's a tough game to handicap. I think it's a tough spot. Again, some people may kind of be pulled in thinking, well, it's a big number for Florida with a backup quarterback, but, you know, also taking on a Tennessee team that, you know, has struggled. And last week, I believe, in that game against Chattanooga, they were +4 or +5 in turnover margin. So that was not the runaway that you would expect it to be. They just took advantage of some short fields in an FCS team that turned the football over a little bit too often. All right, let's go to the MAC here. We got a listener request for this one, which is kind of fun. Game 377-378, Bowling Green and Kent State. Kent State laying double digits in this one, Brian.
Yeah, this was one of the games that was hit earlier by one of the guys that I follow. They played Kent State. Went from 9.5 up. I find it hard being a MAC guy to want to bet on Kent State at this number, but Bowling Green really has not done well. Line went from 9.5, is up to 10.5 now. Not a major move, but still you're going through that key number of 10. My numbers in this game are probably 10.5, so it didn't have me interested. Kent has played some tough opponents, obviously, so far. Arizona State, Kennesaw State, and Auburn. The Kennesaw State, they only win by 3. So, but when they've got up against the tougher schools in Arizona State and Auburn, they were pretty decent. But now the major drop back to play Bowling Green before they've got to go on the road and play Wisconsin next week. I think after playing Arizona State, especially Auburn and Wisconsin in two of the last 3 weeks, next week when they go to Akron, and 2 weeks when they go to Akron, that for their big rivalry game, I think that may be a spot where we could play the Vips, who looked horrendous this year, but you've got a team playing physical defenses in Auburn and Wisconsin to really beat them up. I think that may be a good spot coming up, depending on what kind of line we get. But Kent State's a team that, they've done decently well against those bigger name schools. I just can't lay it here. Bowling Green has been bad. They have been bad, no doubt about it. But when you take a look at their rushing, 3.89 for 4.06 given up. They played Morgan State, Kansas State, and Louisiana Tech. The last 2 weeks, Kansas State and Louisiana Tech just beat them up badly. I had Louisiana Tech in the first half last week, and that worked out well. Do have concerns about the passing game at Bowling Green. They have not done very well defensively, allowing a passer rating of over 162. So they could be passed on. But the Kent passing game, I don't know if that's that great. To me, even though the line says 10.5, I can't lay the Kansas State here, or excuse me, the Kent State here. Probably be a game that I sit out. Just knowing the history, and once you get in, keep in mind, we're to the point now of the season, this week, next week, for the most part, where teams start playing conference games. For example, Air Force plays Boise. Boise plays Air Force every year. Or Air Force plays these non-conference games against teams that don't see them. It's going to be a totally different thing when you play these teams that have the special offenses that when they play out of conference, they have a big advantage on. But when it's a good end of conference, you see the same thing as what you're saying. So you got to go back and check on how certain teams have played against these opponents when you're in a conference play. So a lot of times your teams, like your Navies and your Air Forces that have played very, very well in non-conference games, once they start playing teams that prepare for them every year, it makes a big difference. So keep in mind on that. But Kent State and Bowling Green are two teams that have both been bad, equally bad the last few years. To lay is double digits with the Kent State team, I don't think I'll get there, even though my number says 10.5.
All right, so we transition over to the NFL for a few minutes here. And look, the NFL's a tough market to beat. I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit here this week on the show, that you really got to run on the right side of turnovers, injuries, officiating, pretty much a lot of different things, and hope that your bet still wins, even if you wind up on the right side of the game. So it's been a real challenge, to say the least. But Brian, a couple of games I want to tackle here with you. First, Detroit and Philadelphia, which maybe looks like a little bit of a teaser candidate here with Philadelphia. Total coming down into the mid-40s. Philadelphia, 6.5, 7-point favorite, depending on where you look. But this is the difference between the NFL and college football, where not much was expected of Detroit. Philadelphia, a bunch of weapons, although they got a bunch of injuries now too. And this line was above a touchdown, and now it's come down. This is kind of the whole concept of betting numbers versus betting teams in the NFL.
Definitely. I took Detroit early. I think I might have gotten an 8. I don't remember exactly. I know it was higher than 7, so I wanted to make sure I got that. I thought it would go down. You mentioned the injuries for Philadelphia. It's also a team who really hasn't looked good. After coming back and beating Washington, and then you see Washington get stomped last week. Atlanta was a team who was not very competitive in week one. Philadelphia loses to them. So the Eagles, to me, coming into the season, were my pick to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC, but they have not shown it. And a lot of it has to do with injuries. From a coaching standpoint, it's a mismatch here. Philadelphia's coaching staff is so much better than Detroit. But Detroit's one of those teams that I had them in a nice teaser last week against San Diego. That worked out fine. I don't want to go against Detroit here. I think Detroit is a little bit underrated. But if this line gets down to, you know, 5.5 or 6, that might be a time where you take a look at Philadelphia, even with the injuries. But I don't think it's going that way. I think it gets down to 6.5, bouncing between 6.5 and 7 right now. I could see it going down to 6, but no lower than that. But if you could catch a full touchdown with Detroit, I recommend to play it. Normally, Philadelphia, as you mentioned, the teaser situation, going from 6.5 down to a half on a 6-point teaser, I don't think that's nearly as valuable as a team that's 7.5 and taking them down to 1.5, because the key number is 7 right now. You could bet Philadelphia without laying the 7. I think that's better than taking them down on a teaser if the line happens to close at 6.5. So I think you lose a little bit of value there on the teasers on that number 7. But Philly's a team that I really like, but they've got a lot of injuries. They haven't played well, and people are now starting to realize that, hey, even though we thought Philadelphia was the best thing in the NFC coming into the season, they haven't shown it. And there's a lot of teams that we thought very highly of that have not performed well. And you've got 2 data sets right now that are showing that some of your preseason work, you need to start discounting and look at what we're seeing on the field. And Philly's one of those teams in that regard.
One more game to touch on here with you, Brian. Houston and the Chargers, game 483-484. We jump down to that 4 o'clock Eastern time window here, 4:30 almost, for this game. And, you know, what kind of stands out to me here is that the Chargers don't have a full home field advantage in the NFL. I think a lot of us would agree with that. But they're still getting, you know, the 3 with extra juice or the 3.5 here. A pretty clear stance that the Chargers are a better team on a neutral field than Houston. Do you feel like that's the case? I mean, is there some line value on the home team here?
I think a lot of that still comes from the preseason where a lot of people were picking the Chargers. Houston is one of those teams that offensively they're terrific. Defensively, I have concerns. They rush the passer very well, which is a big advantage in this game because the Chargers have some offensive line injuries. They also have a cornerback who, if he touches him, he falls, and I guess I can't blame him. When you're having as many kids as he has, you only have so much energy. but the Chargers coming into the season were thought of as being the better team here, and I think some of that is still lingering. I like the Chargers team, but it's very similar to Philadelphia. They've got some major injuries. They lose the tight end, when he's playing, he's very good, but he hasn't been able to get many games, and that was a concern. Obviously, the running back's holding out. I don't think that's much to worry about, but we'll have to see how that goes as the season progresses. But, you know, the Chargers have some injuries, and that's the problem. You mentioned the home field advantage. I don't know how well Houston travels. I know a lot of the other teams travel very well, and they'd love to take up the majority of those seats in L.A. Don't know if Houston is at that point where they're going to have a lot of people traveling to L.A. So don't know if that makes much of a difference. But I don't know. At this point, I don't know if I could trust either of these teams right now. You know, lines 3 minus 120, anywhere from that to 3.5. I think the line's about where it should be at this point. It's not one of the games that jumps out at me.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. You mentioned you got the 5% play up there for Friday. What else do you want to plug here at the end of the segment?
Yeah, like I said, 27-9 over the last year, and 5% plays, been doing very well. I don't give out a lot of big plays, and that's the one thing I've always prided myself on, is if I've given out a big play, it's a play that is a big play. Other people out there will give you as many big plays as you want to bet, because they know that's when people buy their plays, is when they've got a big one. For example, last Sunday, I had 6 small plays. I put them all in one package. I went 2-4, by the way. I didn't have a winning day in the NFL, but I didn't have anything I loved. And so I didn't have any 4s or 5s. And at least when you follow me, and you follow most of the guys on our website as opposed to some of the others, they only put up the big plays when they've got them. Some guys have more than I do, but when I do put them out, it's a quality selection. You know, you're getting my best. And in addition to that, we'll be doing videos on Wednesday like we always do. And hopefully we can get you some winners in that regard. But doing live betting show, we're taping this on Tuesday. I do one on, I believe, on Thursday also this week at sportsgrid.com on the Internet. It's going to be on a couple TV websites, Pluto TV, in a couple weeks. I know I get Pluto TV, a lot of good comedy shows on Pluto TV. It's a free service out there, but this show will be on that also. But it's a live betting show. We don't get to as much live betting as I'd like, unfortunately, but we do go over all the baseball games at night, and there are some times where we see some value, and we are able to make some money, and I've done pretty well on those so far, although we haven't had nearly as many of those as I would have liked in those spans. But a lot of good information. And that's Tuesday, right now, this week on Tuesday and Thursday, doing that on Sports Grid at night once the baseball games go on.
And, of course, as always, you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much for joining me, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Everybody have a real profitable weekend.
All right, there you go. There was professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Once again, you can follow his work on Twitter at BLeonardSports. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, regular contributor to VSiN and the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Good to be with you.
Good to have you once again here, buddy. And, you know, once again, a reminder to our listeners that we are recording this on Tuesday afternoon. So some of these odds are very likely to have moved. Some of these golf prices may have moved as well that Wes and I are going to talk about. But because I got something going on here on Wednesday morning, had to record a day in advance just to make sure I could get the show out for everybody. But, Wes, let's go ahead and start, I guess, with the college football market since we finished up on the NFL with Brian. And, you know, you and I were kind of having an interesting talk off the air. And, you know, I'm in some respects, I'm glad people aren't privy to the conversations we have just because of some of the colorful language and whatnot. But it was an interesting discussion, and I do want to carry it over a little bit here to the show in the sense that a lot of people talk about getting the best of the number. A lot of people talk about being ready to get those opening numbers. And as we've been looking at the marketplace here and as I've been studying it throughout the season, I kind of have some doubts as to whether or not that first line move is a true sharp move.
Yeah, and I do too as well. And I mean, I think, and it's been going on for years a little bit, but now I think with the trick was always, hey, you want to beat the opener. You want to get down on these openers when they come out on Sunday or late Sunday night, Monday morning in the NFL case. You want to get down on these. But now these are coming out earlier and earlier because they want to generate handle. And, look, they're taking lower limits early in the week on Sunday and Monday. So you're going to be able to get more down on whether it's college football size or totals, NFL size or totals, as you get later in the week. Like, you'll get more down on a Friday night or a Saturday morning than you can get down on a Sunday afternoon with these openers. So sometimes, I mean, because the limits are low and guys can move enough money to move a line, you'll see them move it to maybe where they want. And it's a side I like this week, and it's one I'll use an example on the college side. Michigan State, Circus Sports has been the first to come out with these college football lines. Michigan State opens at like 8.5 or so. It immediately gets bet down to about 6.5 because obviously Michigan State, with that putrid offensive performance, even though they did gain about 400 yards, only generated 7 points and lose outright at home to Arizona State as a 2-touchdown favorite. But we know that Northwestern is that old, you know, if you know it, they know it. Everybody knows that Northwestern over the years under Pat Fitzgerald is really good as an underdog. I think it's like, I may be off by a game or two on this record. I think it's like 59-38-2 against the spread historically for Fitzgerald since he's been in Evanston. So, yeah, that looks like a big number with an offense that can't score. So, of course, the money is going to come on Northwestern. It gets moved down to 6.5. And I figured there was maybe a small setup here. But I figured maybe that line was going to dance around 7 or 7.5 throughout the week. If you could get the hook, you were going to take the Wildcats. If you can lay 7 or less, then you're going to lay Michigan State. And all of a sudden, that gets hit yesterday, and you're seeing 9.5 pretty much painted in the market, and even a couple rogue tens out there. So it's like, I mean, the first move I definitely don't think is always the right move. You're getting a lot of setups with these low limits.
Yeah, it sure seems that way, and it seems that way across multiple sports markets as well. And you know, another one I can touch on here, a couple of them actually from this week, UCF and Pitt. UCF goes from, you know what, 9.5, 10, all the way up to 14 before coming back down. And Utah State, a similar one, up from 3, 3.5 to 5.5 and maybe a rogue 6. Then that one comes back down to 4. So I think what we're kind of seeing here is that some of these teams with these elite profiles, like a Utah State, like a UCF here so far early on in the season, the modeling crowd instantly loves them because, I mean, models are going to, you know, very much respect elite level efficiency. And teams like Utah State and UCF have that. Then you get the handicapping side that comes in and says, well, wait a minute. UCF, big Power 5 win. They go on the road. Pitt outgained Penn State last week. That line's just too high. I'm going to take Pitt. Then you see, you know, San Diego State, Rocky Long, similar thing to what you mentioned with Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern. Rocky Long is historically a very good underdog coach. So that line comes
right
back down. So the push and pull in the market here is really interesting, especially early in the week, you know, Monday, Tuesday, where you've got a limit increase, you know, overnight from Monday to Tuesday, to where you start getting some bigger bets down the middle of the week. Maybe those are the positions you really want to focus on out there.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And then you look at some games on the board, like on the college slate this week, that you know are probably going to get two-way action, where you're not going to have necessarily a sharp and a square side. You're going to have sharps really on both sides of the game. Like Michigan-Wisconsin, I think, is a perfect example. You're going to have sharp guys lay in Wisconsin with the field goal here, maybe taking a small one money line. And then you're going to have sharp guys taking Michigan in the, at the 3.5. And that line is kind of danced around the number, and I think it probably will all week, where you saw it get as high as 4, you saw it get as low as 2.5, but it's pretty much going to dance around that number. Auburn, Texas A&M, another one. Texas A&M -4. I think it opened maybe some 2.5, 3 out there, but you'll have guys that are smart guys that are on both sides of that game. So there's no true, like we kind of see when we talk about some of the NFL on Sunday, where you have that quote-unquote pros versus Joes type of thing. So, I mean, I think that term may be coming passe because, I mean, different people are going to have different numbers on these games. So it's like, okay, that was the right number to take this side, but the other side, this is the right number. So I think that's really what you're seeing so far.
I want to go a little bit more in depth on that Michigan-Wisconsin game. We did do that on Tuesday with Rolf Michaels, but good to crowdsource opinions, especially on these marquee types of games. I mean, look, Michigan was a 5-point favorite in the Gold Nugget Games of the Year lines. And I fully understand that Michigan has not looked good against Middle Tennessee State. Probably should have lost to Army. You could certainly make a case that, you know, they should have gone down to the Black Knights there, even though they did only give up, what, 3.5, 3.8 yards per carry, something like that. What has happened with Wisconsin in two games against absolute dregs in South Florida and Central Michigan to necessitate a move of 8.5 points from where these two teams were over the summer? I mean, that's extremely big adjustment, I think, to two data points where Michigan's played the tougher schedule.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I am going to be on Michigan at 3.5. And I think, like I said, that's going to dance around, I think, the key number. And Wisconsin was who I picked on that side of the ledger in the Big Ten West. And I do think that they're still the team to beat over on that side. But you look at Michigan. I mean, this team going into the season, when we were doing a lot of our radio shows kind of previewing whether it was win totals or whether it was conference futures or college football playoff futures, Michigan and Ohio State were basically like co-favorites in the Big Ten. I mean, maybe like 3-2, I think plus 150. Now Ohio State has moved to the odds-on favorite at minus 110. Michigan has moved already to 4-1 to win the Big Ten, and off two sluggish performances in terms of the fact that they were big favorites, they didn't cover at home. So, I mean, I think that's what people will bet, and that will adjust within the numbers, because it's like, well, Michigan's running this new up-tempo offense. They were life and death to beat Army, even though they outstatted Army in the game. The situation called because Army was able to slow the tempo and keep possession of the football, which they're one of the best in the country at doing. So all of a sudden, you're like, oh, you were life and death to beat Army. So, you know, maybe this team isn't good. And we know how Michigan also ended the season last year, getting blown out, giving up 62 in Columbus to Ohio State. And then a lot of these, you know, few of their draftable guys elected to sit out the bowl game, but then Florida whacked them 41-15 in the Peach Bowl. So, you know, the perception on Michigan is so low right now. And then Wisconsin, even though they beat two dregs, did win by a combined score of 110-0. So that's going to be impressive. And you look at all the defensive rankings, you got to take into account the competition, though. But they're like number one in total defense. They're right up there in rushing defense in terms of third down defense and obviously scoring defense because they haven't allowed a single point in the first two games. But, yeah, I think the perception, and it gets to go against Michigan here, but I would go the other way here. I think and I do also wonder if Michigan showed everything in the first 2 weeks. I mean, considering they had, even though Army took them to the brink, I wonder if Michigan maybe didn't hold a few things back in those first two games.
My number's 1.5. I mean, you know, everybody that listens to this show and has listened for a long time knows I'm an Ohio State fan. So it pains me greatly to say anything positive about that team up north. But I mean, this does feel like an overreactionary line to me. This feels like, you know, Michigan struggled going through, and look, maybe Michigan looks absolutely awful on offense again in this game. Maybe they're just not efficient, but still, I mean, this isn't a triple option that you're preparing for where, look, I mean, I don't understand, and this is going to be an off-topic rant. I do like Michigan in the game, by the way. But if you're a Power 5 team, why in the hell would you ever schedule a service academy? What is the incentive in having to learn the option in a short week and getting cut blocked all day long with your defensive line? Like, I, for the life of me, have no idea why any team worth anything would schedule a service academy in the non-conference. And I think that's part of it. Michigan and Oklahoma back-to-back years.
Yeah, and if you're going to schedule not just even a service academy, you can maybe expand it to some of these teams that do run triple option. And you saw that in week one with LSU scheduling Georgia Southern before the game at Texas. LSU, when you have it in the first game of the season and you've got all these summer practices and these two-a-days in August, you're more apt to be able to be better prepared against that option. And LSU saw it against Georgia Southern in week one, where maybe that result's going to be a little different if they play it in the middle of the season, but they absolutely destroyed Georgia Southern, who damn near beat Minnesota and probably, you could have argued, should have won at Minnesota last week. But when you have that time to prepare, it really matters. But when you're Michigan and you're playing it the second, third game and you've just got that standard week to prepare, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah, it definitely is. And again, I think that's part of the perception problem here in this game is that, you know, a lot of people just don't take things like that into account of, you know, hey, they just played this gimmicky offensive scheme that's hard to prepare for. And you lost some key guys from that defense last year too. You know, and look, I mean, for right or, you know, for better or worse, right or wrong, you're looking ahead to this Wisconsin game with a bye or not. I mean, this is a huge game for you. So I do think Michigan's the right side there. I mean, I don't know if I love it enough to take it for a nugget pick or something like that. But, you know, again, I mean, it'll be a personal play to be sure. Another side in college football that you were kind of looking at here, this is an interesting one. The Ohio Bobcats kind of on your radar this week.
Yeah, and I've gone back and forth a little on this game. And look, it took a lot of money early on. I think this opened maybe like 6 or 6.5, I want to say. I'm just trying to go a little bit from memory here. But Louisiana Lafayette did get bet in this game, and it's down to about 3.5. And look, they got bet because, look, they're fourth in FBS in total offense and third in rushing offense. And Napier, and I think this is a program that's an up-and-comer down in at Louisiana Lafayette, because Billy Napier coached under Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban. So he's obviously had tutelage of guys that know how to win and guys that are absolute killers as coaches. But this is a little bit of a tricky spot, too, for UL Lafayette. I mean, they put up 748 and 593 in terms of yardage against FCS, Texas Southern, and Liberty the last 2 weeks, and also 430 on Mississippi State, which is a respectable against what's usually a pretty good defense. But you've got your three biggest conference games in a row over a four-week span coming up. You go to Georgia Southern, you get Appalachian State at home, and then at Arkansas State. That's essentially going to determine where this team's going to be in the Sun Belt in terms of winning that conference. Ohio's got to come off a rival loss. They lost to Marshall 33-31, and you know this being from Ohio. Those campuses are only, like, I think, 70 miles apart, Ohio and Marshall. So that's a big rivalry, and Ohio came up short, but they got two straight road games that they had. Now they come home, and then they have a bye week before they open the MAC schedule. This is one I could see maybe coming back with a little bit of money on Ohio, because people are going to look at those ULL stats and be really impressed. But I think this could be a buy low opportunity on Ohio. And I'm seeing some threes juice, like minus 115. And this is a real tricky spot, I think, for Lafayette, and kind of a nondescript, non-conference game where you've got all of your big games in the conference pretty much in a row. There's a bye week in between, but, you know, when you're ULL and you're in the Sun Belt and you're in a non-Power 5 conference, I mean, that's pretty much your goal, is to win the conference title. And so I could maybe see a little bit of a shaky effort from that side, and maybe Ohio, knowing that they've lost two in a row on the road to Pitt, Marshall, maybe this is kind of a get-right game for them.
I like your thought process there. I think it's really interesting to also consider the fact that Athens, Ohio is not Lafayette, Louisiana. You know, I mean, you talk about travel spots and stuff like that, and they really come up a lot in college basketball, you know, where you may be in one of those real small, low-major conferences. You fly into an airport that's 3 hours away from from where you're actually going. You got to take a bus and all kinds of other stuff to get there. While Athens, Ohio isn't that hard to get to, it's still pretty far from both Columbus and Cincinnati. So I don't know where Lafayette's actually flying in, but you know, you still got some travel. It's kind of a weird spot to go. Ohio has a pretty good home field advantage there in the MAC, because Athens is in the middle of nowhere, so there's nothing else to do. It's an interesting spot, to say the least. And then again, as you said, you know, how much game planning goes into the equation? And there's always questions about these scheduling spots, about, well, how do you quantify a look-ahead spot? How do you quantify a letdown spot? I get it. It shouldn't be, you know, pure justification for a play. But at the same time, for Lafayette, like you said, they have three huge conference games coming up. How much emphasis are they putting on this game? That's where you get the look-ahead factor, is the team may not be prepared. So that's kind of what you're sort of hoping for in a spot like this.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, that's kind of the handicapping that I really like to do in terms of just finding those situational spots. I mean, we kind of, when we had a discussion off the air before we started the segment, talking about like modelers and stuff. And I think there's just so many different ways to do this. And what makes sports betting such a unique thing and a unique challenge is there are some guys that can win being modelers. I'm not one of those guys. I'm not good enough to do that. Where I'm, what my strength is, I think, is analyzing psychology of these teams, especially when you're dealing with mercurial personalities of 18 to 23 year olds that are in college. I mean, that I think is kind of what I would say my strength or my bread and butter is as a handicapper, is to really evaluate those spots and those situations rather than kind of just going off raw numbers.
Before we transition over to the NFL side, Wes, any other spots, any other interesting things you're kind of looking at this weekend in college?
Yeah, there were a couple that I was looking at. And I know we talked about those Big Ten games earlier, and I'll just try to go rapid fire here. One I looked at was Miami of Ohio and Ohio State. Now, you got to really hold your nose for this one if you want to take Miami of Ohio at about 39.5, kind of the market high. Ohio State is, of course, off a Big Ten road win at Indiana, a very easy win, much to my chagrin as an Indiana alum. That was a putrid performance. But nevertheless, Ohio State's really good, and I think their defense is legitimately improved this year. I mean, it wasn't a talent issue. It may have been a coaching issue or just, guys not taking proper angles or whatnot. But they get Miami of Ohio here, who you know all these kids that play at Miami University. I know you've been to Oxford, and I have as well. These are kids that probably mostly are from Ohio that dreamed of playing for the Buckeyes or dreamed of playing at Ohio Stadium. So they're at least going to do that on this other side. So you know that this team's at least going to get an effort. And this is kind of transitive handicapping a little bit. They both have a common opponent really early in the season. Miami of Ohio lost in a rivalry game to Cincinnati 35-13. Cincinnati covered, minus 17.5 was the close. Cincinnati, of course, the week before went to Ohio State and got shut out. They actually took the money, and Ohio State got to as low as 14, and Ohio State shut them out 42-0, a pretty easy win. Does Ohio State, and you got to evaluate the psychology of Ryan Day, is he going to be like Urban Meyer here? Does he really want to lay out Miami of Ohio? Knowing that they've got a road game next week against Nebraska, who has gotten a lot of hype, and Ohio State is kind of in that show them who's boss type of spot where it's like, okay, this is the plucky upstart in the Big Ten, Nebraska. Well, we got to show them who King Daddy really is in this conference. So you get Miami of Ohio in here, and look, Urban in the past has laid some of these guys out and really couldn't help it. I mean, I remember when he played Bowling Green, who gave him his first job, and Ohio State won 77-10. So this is a little bit of a risk to take somebody like Miami of Ohio, but maybe Ohio State is not as interested as we think in terms of trying to win this game by 40 points. So I thought that was kind of an interesting spot as well going forward in the college football.
Yeah, and also Ohio State got Nebraska on deck on the road, so that's a tricky little game for them. And 28 guys on the Miami of Ohio roster from Ohio, certainly wishing they could probably go to Ohio State. Nothing against Miami of Ohio, does have a very, very good hockey program. But that's an excellent point. And also, too, I mean, look, you want Justin Fields healthy. You want J.K. Dobbins healthy. You probably want Master Teague healthy because he's played really well, too. I mean, you're going to see a lot of Chris Chuganoff in this game. You're going to see probably whoever the third string running back is for Ohio State. You're going to see a lot of dudes get the chance to play. So I think the one thing I would say is that the worrisome part for me backing Miami of Ohio is last week, I know you watched the Ohio State-Indiana game, Justin Fields overthrew multiple guys down the field that were open. So I think in the first half, Ohio State's going to just completely open up the playbook, give Fields the chance to throw the ball downfield, try to get some touch on some of those deep balls. But I think in the second half, they put it completely away. So maybe full game Miami of Ohio, first half Ohio State, something like that. You know, maybe the way that I would look to go with this. It just makes sense to me. The same thing as FAU. Blow them out early, put it in cruise control.
Yeah, and I think so. I mean, but basically, like, taking this Miami of Ohio team, you're basically saying, okay, we need about 10 to 14 points out of these guys. If we can get 10 to 14 out of these guys, then we've pretty much got a good chance to cover, because it did remind me a little bit of the FAU game where FAU got kind of in that back door. And look, they were going to keep trying when they got down early. And kind of the middle of the fourth quarter, you started to see a lot more second and third unit guys for the Buckeyes.
All right, so we transition over to the NFL side of things here. And this league, man, it's kind of a tough watch, but it's a real tough bet right now. You've got all the PI reviews. You've got so many quarterback injuries. Now we can add Cam Newton to the list as well, so it seems like he may not play this week against Arizona. You've got just a two lines are more than three touchdowns. It's a tough bet right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to see in week three, to see two, three touchdown favorites, essentially. I mean, and I guess looking back before the season, look, the teams that we thought were going to be the, I guess, true elite teams, the teams that had the shortest Super Bowl future odds, New England, Kansas City, the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, those teams are really, really good. And then some teams that we thought were really, really bad are really, really bad. That would be Miami, I think, and potentially a couple other teams, the Giants. I mean, those were teams, the Redskins, that people thought weren't going to be very good. And then there's a couple mild surprises. I don't think most expected the Pittsburgh Steelers to be 0-2 at this point, but here they are. And then obviously now having to play the number two quarterback for the duration of the season. So there's always kind of some surprises here. And then you still want to take things with grain of salt because it's a 2-0 start. And look, there's always a couple teams maybe that, okay, this team's for real. Well, we know that the Patriots, Rams, Chiefs, they're for real at 2-0. But then there's a couple teams out there like San Francisco, who I thought was going to be better this year, and I bet their win total, but I'm not sure if they're that good right now. Seattle is another one. I'm not sure if they're really that good. Buffalo is another one, 2-0. I'm not sure if they're really that good, but a lot of the 2-0 teams, basically, at least this year, I don't think it's much of an overreaction. Because I was asking this question on our show, The Green Zone, on the VSiN last night to a bookmaker here in town. I go, which 2-0 team are you selling? Which 0-2 team are you buying? And usually there's an 0-2 team, even if they maybe don't make the playoffs, but that kind of comes around and turns it around and at least gets competitive and goes on a late run in the season. And he goes, these 0-2 teams just seem really historically bad. I mean, you know Miami's not going to turn around. You know the Jets probably aren't going to turn around. The Giants have already announced that Daniel Jones is going to take over the reins. So you got a rookie quarterback out there that's going to have to go through the growing pains. Denver doesn't look very good, especially on offense. And Cincinnati came back to earth last week, even though I do kind of like them this week in that spot against Buffalo. But, I mean, that's what you're seeing. I mean, there kind of is a haves and a have-nots category, really, in the NFL right now, at least early on.
Well, and the problem that I'm finding is, I mean, look, you know, Miami's so bad that Dallas may cover this number. The Jets, with all their injuries, they may just be so bad that New England covers this number. And the problem is that, you know, you've got your elites, you've got your obvious have-nots, and all the teams in the middle just, to some degree, feel interchangeable. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if you know, one team beats another in any given week. And that's the hard part about the NFL here, is I feel like unless you're going to take these really bad teams and be contrarian and hope that they're able to cover, or you're going to take the really good teams, it's almost like you're flipping coins with these teams in the middle, because they either have, you know, average to below average quarterback play, poor coaching, or, you know, some sort of already present injury problem. So
right.
I don't know what the answer is in the NFL right now. And it sucks to say that in week two, and especially with, you know, some contest investment out there. I know both of us have that, but these teams in the middle, I don't know if I can really trust any of them week after week after week.
Yeah. I mean, you look at some of these teams and there's a couple matchups like Houston and the Chargers. They look like they're pretty interchangeable right now. I mean, they look like they're the same team, maybe team that could go 9-7 and compete for the bottom two wild card spots. I mean, Houston can still win that division. Anybody can win the AFC South. That's really the only division where all four teams, including the team that's 0-2, have legitimate shots to win the division. But, yeah, some of these matchups, Atlanta and Indianapolis, they look a little bit interchangeable right now. So you really, I mean, it's almost like what you have to do is try to go against the perception from the week before, because with only a 16-game schedule, the NFL is the ultimate overreaction sport. I mean, we see it in baseball. You know, there are times that really good teams, there are times the Yankees and the Dodgers are going to get swept. There are times when historically speaking, I'll just use an example, the Warriors may go on a road trip and lose 3 of 4. That's going to happen when you have more games and more contests and I guess, longer season. But in the NFL, you're going to get that weak overreaction. But it has been a little hard when, I guess, the line of demarcation is so much in permanent marker, if you will, black permanent Sharpie marker between really, really good teams and really, really bad teams. So it is very hard. And I mean, for contest purposes, not even just betting for your own pocket, in contest purposes, it's hard to use the Jets in New England. It's hard to use Miami and Dallas this week. I mean, so those are almost games you immediately want to throw out. I mean, look, New England, 18.5, I mean, on the road, even against the bad team, that's a divisional game. There was rumors of a tropical storm, so that kept me off the game, and they end up covering it easy. So then it's like, well, I feel dumb because I'm going against kind of what I've always known, which is not to lay double digits, and especially on the road in the NFL, doesn't necessarily mean I want the other side. But then you feel kind of dumb because they just cover these numbers so easy. But I still can't bring myself to do it because your margin for error is so small if you lay these type of gargantuan favorites. But then you got to really hold your nose to be on the other side.
It's almost like what we've talked about before, and I know you filled in a few times for the Super Contest segment last year where we discussed, I mean, you know, when there are, let's say that there are, you know, six teams on a bye, all of a sudden you're down to 13 games you can pick from in the contest. You're not going to take Thursday because there's too much late injury information, so you're down to 12. Well, if teams like Miami or, you know, the Jets with Luke Falk or God knows who's playing quarterback for them in the middle of the season, you know, if you start scratching out those games, well, then maybe you're down to 11 or maybe you're down to 10.
Right.
It's hard to pick half of the NFL card. I mean, it just is with the tightness and the efficiency of the market. So, man, it's going to be tough this year, I think, for contest purposes. But one thing I do want to ask you about here, one game in particular, and then I'll let you go. You mentioned liking Cincinnati a little bit. I know you mentioned in the notes you sent over, maybe looking at Pittsburgh to rally with Mason Rudolph and, you know, maybe San Francisco playing over its head a little bit. Also, first home game back after back-to-back road games. I want to ask you about Oakland because I've had some discussions with some people here trying to figure out how we handicap the Oakland Raiders. You know, play well for a quarter against the Chiefs, wind up losing that game, not covering the number. They don't play at home until November 3rd. They play four true road games, a game in London, and have a bye. So if I'm looking at this in the NBA or the NHL, something like that, I'm looking to rally behind that team thinking, well, they're going to try and get this road trip off to a good start. You know, because teams want to do that. You want to try to play 500 on the road. I don't know if that applies here in the NFL to Oakland. So how are you handling this situation against Minnesota this week?
Yeah, I wasn't positive what I was going to do with this game because, look, I really like Minnesota's defense. I really like their running game. They did a nice job rallying against Green Bay when they got down pretty early and actually shut out Green Bay in the second half. But, With the Raiders, I mean, I think with that game last week, and I actually split on that game, I took the Raiders for the game, but then I also took them for the second half, and it ended up being 0-0, where I didn't think the Raiders played horrible. I just think they got blitzkrieged really quick by the Chiefs, and then all of a sudden it's 28-10, and what that forces you to do, because that team can score so fast and so often, you make mistakes. And Derek Carr made a couple interceptions where he's trying to force it, trying to make a play, and ends up making mistakes. So you've seen that line. I think I'm seeing about 8. I'm even seeing some 8.5 out there. That might be a game I stay away from this week because I don't know what we're going to get out of the Raiders off that loss. And then now knowing that you're away from home. They have a bye week in between there, but most of the guys on the bye week go home or go back to their alma maters or whatnot. So, yeah, Oakland's not going to be playing in that stadium until the first week of November because they got a London game mixed in there with against Chicago. So, you know, I'm not sure. This might be something where I just have to sit and watch and see how this team adjusts. I mean, when you have a long road trip, you would think just conventional wisdom that your best effort is at least going to be your first game because it's like, okay, we know what we're in for. We know the schedule. We know we're on the road. So we've got to have our most focus and our best effort, at least in the first spot. So that would make me kind of lean to the Oakland side. But this is a young team with a lot of new people on that roster that were not on that roster last year. So that is one I'm probably going to look to pass on.
Wes Reynolds, who's working, you find on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one, also contributor to that Point Spread weekly publication over at VSiN. And Wes, when can people hear you on the air?
Yeah, Monday nights, 6 to 10 Pacific time with Brady Cannon on the Green Zone. I also work a Thursday and Friday shift. I'm usually on from 8 to 10. Amal Shah is on from the 6 to 8 with Brady Cannon hosting. And then also the Green Zone, we do it on the weekends while the action is going on. Saturday for the college football slate, 2 to 6 Pacific time, and Sunday for the NFL, 3 to 7 Pacific time.
Well, like I said, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time and your flexibility here doing this a day in advance for me. Really appreciate that. We'll talk to you again next week.
You got it, boss. Thanks for having me.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. We'll see what we do with that second segment on Friday or on Thursday. Then Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 3 and Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.